little open letter to Subway. I have devoted so much airtime to standing next to you through this entire ordeal.
Within like a couple pages, Gerak mentions artisanal IPAs and the Grateful Dead. And I was like, this is the Rosetta Stone. This is the Genesis story.
If I'm being totally honest, suckers are just things I think might be trout until they're not.
He didn't encourage giving kids guns or smoking while canoeing down some whitewater in this one. So, you know. Good morning, degenerate anglers, and welcome to Bent, the fishing podcast that forgot the I before E rule when it got the word believe tattooed below the giant muskie that was already inked on its lower back. I'm Joe Cermelli.
And I'm Hayden Samak. And whenever I see a misspelled tattoo, it makes me wonder if the client is always right and like insisted on the spelling, or if like just tattoo artists in general are not great spellers.
Right? I've always kind of wondered the same thing. Like, even if you're not hooked on phonics, like, does nobody run spell check? You know what I'm saying? anyway, if you haven't already guessed, our permanent solution to a loose theme this week is tats.
Nice.
Fish tats specifically. And I have some. But before we discuss those, you, sir, have a lot more ink than I do. But are any of them, is there any fish on your person?
No, there's not. I do have like as far as outdoor tattoos go, I do have like a pheasant tattoo on my arm, and I have some elk antlers. I have an arrow going through a sparrow on my wrist, and I will go on record now and say I have so many tattoos that I really just kind of don't give a shit anymore. And
you're that guy.
And yeah, well, I mean, you know, I might be talked in to getting some fish ink in the future in the name of Ben.
Oh, careful. I like it, but careful, right?
We can have some fun with it.
I mean, dude, I wasn't going to give you a hard time about not having a fish tat. I will give people a hard time about lots of things, but not tattoos because they are personal. Like, I would never say, I'm pretty sure you never shot a bull elk. Like, that would be a dick move. I wouldn't do that to you. That's not me.
I wanted some sort of big game tattoo, man. This was back in like, I don't know, 2018. And you know, elk antlers are just a lot more like graphically appealing than I think a whitetail rack. I couldn't quite figure that out.
All right, there you go. I mean, like, you don't really need any validation, but you've also hinted to me in the past that you might have some ink you regret slightly, which I can identify with because I do, but like with an asterisk, okay? Like, as it goes with many youths, like you can't get inked fast enough when you turn 18. And my mom, who is awesome, was even willing to pay for my first tattoo. And I wanted something music related. And my dad was like, listen, I know you're into playing that hard, screaming, garbage shit right now, but you might not always be, but you've always loved fishing and you've always loved sharks. And he was right? He was right. So I got a great white instead. But being in such a rush and having like a limited budget, like my mom wasn't like, whatever it costs, she's like, you got $300 or whatever. I just pulled one off the wall. And I've seen the same shark on the wall in every tattoo shop I've been in since. So, like, kind of more than being representative of my love of sharks and fishing, it morphed into more of an homage to just being 18 and in a hurry.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't hate it, but it was chosen in haste. I'll say that much.
First off, talking about, like, the just pulling one off the wall, a lot of times, like, that's kind of a cool way to get tattooed because you're kind of participating in, like, a canon of tattooing. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
That piece of flash, like, kind of becomes iconic, and it's kind of like a way to, I don't know, you find that mostly in people who are, like, collecting tattoos, like, in a big way, but I don't think there's anything wrong with that, man.
No, I know, there's not, but I was just like, that one, you know what I mean? Like, I'm like, there's nothing special about it or something, you know?
Yeah, well, let me tell you this. Some of my earliest tattoos weren't that way, and I kind of wish that they were. For instance, like, the very first tattoo that I ever got was an arrow on my forearm, and that's because I grew up, like, archery hunting, and I thought that was pretty neat. Then, about, like, a year or two later, I don't know if it's because of, like, Pinterest or some shit, every white girl on the planet got an arrow tattoo exactly in the same spot. You need to go back to move forward. Like in the same exact spot as I had. So I actually I ended up putting a snake around it 3 years later just to make it look a little bit different.
I can see you go back in like, bro, put a snake around this. Put a snake around this.
Dude. And not only that, man, but it's so common. Again, we're going to talk about Chester Floyd in The Office here. He has an almost identical tattoo on his forearm. Arrow, same spot.
Fair enough, fair enough. And at least I will say this, though, right? I haven't seen my shark on other people. I've seen the flash in the other tattoo parlors, but I haven't seen it on someone else. Anyway, so you only spent a couple years before you got your second. I didn't get any more ink till I was 27. It was for my one-year wedding anniversary. My wife, who had no tattoos, wanted one, so that's what we did. And she got, a tiny flower on her foot, and I got a big brown trout and striper crossing over an outline of Jersey on my leg. But that time, I had a buddy draw it. Now, in hindsight,
could it
still have been drawn better? Yes, right? At the time, though, I was like, bro, you're the best tattoo drawer I ever seen. But at least it's a one of a kind, and I still like it. So I'm no regrets, no regrets. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. Recently, my girlfriend asked if she could draw a tattoo for me to go get, and the answer was absolutely not. For sure, no. It's kind of common, but even those sort of maybe shitty tattoos are a lot of fun.
Yeah, they can be. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so I one time I let my buddy's apprentice do a mountain scene on my leg when she was still kind of learning how to tattoo, and it's easily the worst tattoo that I have. It looks like an orange over two ice cubes. But when I see it, it makes me laugh. After you get enough tattoos, you kind of stop caring so much, and they just kind of become these things that, as you said with your tattoo, mark a certain time in your life or whatever.
Yeah, and that's all it is. It's a remembrance. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
You remember more when than why.
Sure.
If that makes sense.
Absolutely.
And once you have however many, though, you kind of get into that why not zone. I have some buddies who would describe themselves as maybe addicted to getting tattoos, but I don't really get that.
Yeah, and I know it can be very addictive. I never caught the bug. Right now, I have no desire for more than what I have, but I still love tattoos. I follow so many tattoo artists and know so many that specialize in fish, and I'm man, where were you? Why couldn't I know you when I was 27? You know, but you can't beat yourself up over that. You really shouldn't beat yourself up over any tat, because as long as it means something to you, it's all good. I will say, though, the only thing I could never fully get behind and figure out was getting a gear brand logo. And I get teams, I get, even a band, but not brands that just sell things, like Adidas or K-Swiss or something like that. And I'm sorry if that's offensive to anybody, to each their own. That's just one segment of tattoos I never quite got.
Yeah, man. I was thinking personally about getting the First Light logo, a little teardrop under my eye, then keep adding another one for every mule deer I shot or something.
Okay.
On some outdoors gangster shit. I don't know. I don't get the brand logos at all. I think it's sort of weird.
Yeah. Come on. Don't get the G. Loomis fish bones inked on yourself. The smarter thing to do would be to get the logo of our sponsors, 13 Fishing, tattooed on your neck. I think that's pretty obvious,
Yeah, I mean, all of my logo hatred said, I will mention that I have a full 13 Fishing back piece being drawn up right now. It's got spin rods and some ice fishing, but there's a bass jumping out of the ice as if there were no ice at all. It really makes a lot of sense. It's really well thought out. It's going to be beautiful. The tattoo artist is going to hate it.
Yeah. Don't you also, you had an appointment to get their logo branded on you too as well, right?
It's not an appointment per se. My buddy was gonna bend a wire hanger and superheat it with
school.
A blowtorch.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a hack for all you crazy kids out there.
There you go.
And we thought about doing the 13 logo, but decided to go with one of their flash bangs instead. I was gonna get it right on my ribs, kinda.
Oh man, the coat hanger. That's how they did it in Notre Dame High School circa 2000. 1. When did I graduate? Something like that. Anyway, that's You're a great old. Choice. That's a great spoon on the ice as well. Since this is not weird, the rattle chamber is built right into those, and there's an integrated glow stick that lasts for hours.
It might last for hours, man, but it's probably not going to last as long as the pain from that branding iron or coat probably hanger not. Cum branding iron.
Probably not. Oh, man. Anyway, keeping with our skin and fish ink theme, we're about to hit our covering water segment with a man that is arguably one of the best and most sought-after tattoo artists in the country. He specializes in fish. He's also a serious fish head. He also co-owns a fly shop, and Hayden borrowed a bunch of fly-tying shit from him during the height of the COVID pandemic.
I'm going in. Cover me, Porkins.
I can hold it.
Pull on!
No, I'm all right. Pull on!
Okay, so we're here with my pal, Dan Santoro. Dan is a renowned tattoo artist and is considered one of the best fish tattoo artists currently out there. Although it's not like how you would traditionally, it's not like hyperrealism or something like that, but it's kind of like hard to put your finger on.
Thank you.
Dan, how would you describe it?
Stylistically, it just kind of falls in line with how I believe tattoos should be applied. It's not so much that I think it looks cool, although I do, but a lot of it is done for kind of like utility reasons.
Yeah. So you would say like the hallmarks of your style are like kind of bold and, you know, hard lines and
correct.
Dan's too humble to say this, but I'm going to make him a little bit uncomfortable here. Dan and his work have been featured on the Vice Network, Fly Lords, in countless tattoo books, magazines, and a whole bunch of other spots in the dark web. Dan is also a super fishy dude and recently has become the co-founder and co-owner of Housefly with his partner, Sean Whitman. Now, Housefly is a super cool fly shop in Northeast Pennsylvania in the town of Hawley. And that's actually a spot that when I was back on the East Coast, I spent a ton of time fly fishing. Joe, you've hit like the Lackawaxen and stuff.
Yeah. Well, in the upper, I was going to say I have a leg up on you because you're from here, but I've been there. I've been to Housefly. And it's a great shop. What I appreciate about what you guys are doing is I think it's more than a fly shop. I get the sense you're trying to build a brand around it. I mean, all the branding, everything is super cool. I mean, just the name Housefly is super cool.
Thank you.
Great store.
Thank you. Yeah. And we have another partner as well. It's Sean, myself, and then there's Tim. Tim lives in Brooklyn, so he's not here a lot. And Tim is a super important part of the story. And I think also a super important part of our even just like visual aesthetic. So yeah, it's the three of us. Unfortunately, right. I'm not here a ton either because I have a day job tattooing, but Sean is holding down the fort. And then Tim is truly the man behind the curtain in Brooklyn. So
it's an eclectic shop. And I mean that in the best possible way. Like I was in there and while you have everything you need and more for local fishing, I was like, I want one of those skateboards with the Dan Santoro fish on. Like that's what I bought. Yeah. I had a skateboard from you guys, but great story. Right.
Thank you.
How did you like kind of become so well known for your fish tattoos in particular? Cause it is something you're like well known for at this point.
I don't really know. I definitely was doing fish tattoos for years. Even before I was fly fishing, I was doing fishing tattoos just because of I just always dug it. And then 2018, maybe it was 19. I don't remember exactly. I did a thing where I gave half the money of every fish tattoo to a conservation group.
Oh, no way.
I did.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's cool.
It actually was kind of, it was a little daunting. It was like a really fun project. I even got creative with like who I would give the money to. I was going, I was basically giving it to, the blue chips in the beginning, like, Trout Unlimited or whatever.
Yeah.
So if I did a striped bass tattoo, I was giving it to Delaware Baykeeper or whatever. You know what I mean? I was like,
that's a lot of work though, man. Yeah, especially when you do a ton of species.
It was fun. It was fun. It's been like years and I still get so much literature sent to my house.
like conservation literature.
Yeah, I mean, it was, conservation literature, or just like, hey, remember us, But like, I really feel like that was a big push for me and fishing tattoos, because I definitely tattooed people that had never thought about getting tattooed before.
Right.
But they were referred to me through this kind of conservation project.
So fast forward a couple months after we met, COVID hit. Actually, it wasn't even a couple months, it was a couple weeks.
Yeah, no, it's pretty fresh.
Yeah, now my reaction to that happening was, you know, I went and I grabbed my, like, then-girlfriend, and we shot up to this little cabin my folks had on Lake Wallenpaupack. And it turns out that you lived directly across the lake from that cabin. And, you know, you and I got to chatting on the old Insta-slam. I borrowed some fly tying stuff from you, and here we are a couple years later.
Yeah. But you brought over tamales.
Oh, I forgot about that. Oh. I bought you...
Homemade tamales, over, huh?
Yeah, with a, I think they were with a turkey I shot that year. You were Springbird.
I'd hazard to say you're probably like one of the first people I saw since like lockdown. Like it was early.
Did he bleach off whatever he borrowed with his bleach spray bottle?
I
don't
know. No, I just didn't give it back. I still have it. I still have the bobbin I borrowed from him.
It's fine, man.
Nice. Nice.
Well, you got plenty of fly fishing stuff now.
I'm swimming in it. It's
yeah,
fine.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, so the ultimate reason we brought you here, man, was to do this covering water segment with us. So I'm going to explain how that works, right? So it's theoretically an interview segment, except we do it a little different. What we've done here is Hayden and I have come up with 10 questions each that we're going to rapid fire at you and get through as many as we can in 2 minutes. And the whole idea here is that you don't have too much time to think about your answer. You just have to fire it off, right? And when we're done, we do promise that we will give you one full minute to expand or explain whichever one was like the most damning, whichever one was like, oh shit, I should not have answered that. We will give you one full minute to make everything right. Sound good?
Yeah, I'll do my best here. I mean, I'm going to do my best and not make everyone damning.
All right. So I'm going to put two minutes on the clock. Oh, Hayden, you are going to kick off and we are running.
Ever eat a small jaw?
No.
Finish this sentence. If I never had to tattoo another blank again, I wouldn't be sad.
Lower back.
Oh, okay. Went with that. Beautiful. Okay. Got it.
What is your favorite podcast?
Making Sense with Sam Harris.
Ah, okay. What is your favorite podcast?
Clouser, Bugger, or Zonker? You can only pick one.
Clouser.
Good choice.
Drift boat or a raft?
I haven't been in too many rafts, but drift boat.
Nice. Hard boat for the win. Yeah. Why is fly fishing culture so obsessed with Grateful Dead logos and symbolism?
I think the way that the music is structured is very, like, you know, it's obviously very improv, and so is fishing, and it's like this kind of never-ending thing.
That was a real, that's a really good answer.
I mean, before I
because fly fishing guides are stone, man. Yeah,
that's what most people say.
Yeah, that's true, and I also kind of realize I'm reading Trout Bum for the second time that within a couple pages, Gearak mentions, artisanal IPAs and the Grateful Dead, and I was like, this is the Rosetta Stone. This is the Genesis story.
All right, keep rolling, baby. Okay. We were taking.
I think blank is criminally underrated.
Cheese whiz.
Wow. Nice. We got to hang out more. In your opinion, the most painful place to get a tattoo is?
Oh man, upper ribs.
Okay.
What is your best river cleanup find?
Oh, a memorial for somebody that passed away that was made into like a raft and they tried to send it down the river, like probably like Viking funeral style. But where we found it, it probably didn't go like more than like a couple hundred yards.
Misfits, Guar, or Spinal Tap?
Oh, Misfits. Like,
yeah, man.
There's like Misfits against like 99.9% of music. Even like the new junk.
What is your worst river cleanup find?
Oh, man. I'm so many needles, animal parts, like deer and garbage bags and shit like that. Yep. Like we've had people straight like retching like at cleanups. You know what I mean? So anything like bio is like, no.
Gotcha. What's the most unique fish species you've ever tattooed?
I don't know. People kind of go for like the big five or whatever. You know what I mean? It's like always kind of the same. Yeah. I did recently do a gar. It's mostly trout. I mean, everybody wants like brown trout, rainbow trout. I've done a lot of largemouth, some smallmouth. Even though I prefer catching smallmouth, I prefer tattooing largemouth. Smallmouth are too subtle. Those patterns are just like too subtle.
Yeah.
Largemouth, you need that one horizontal bar and you know what it is. You know what I mean?
Okay. But,
Well, we we've already gone way over two. We were, as I say, we already gone over 2 minutes. So let's each hit one more. No, no, no. It's all good. We'll each do one more.
I'm Italian.
Go ahead, Hayden. One more.
Do you think fly fishermen are better than conventional fishermen?
Oh, they don't litter as much.
Yes or no, bro? Yes or no, bro?
Yes.
Okay. Last one for me. Last one for me. Why are smallmouths so much better than largemouths?
Oh, bro, it's like night and day, man. It's like if you're doing like a blind taste test with just like, you know, your eyes closed, and you just hold the f***ing pole, bro. Come on, like a 5 pound largemouth don't feel shit against like a f***ing 1 pound small.
I love it. It's like the last.
add a little current there.
All right. That, yeah, dude, that's the second covering water guest in a row that closed by shitting on largemouths. Okay. It's like a thing, and it's terrific. Oh, man. That was fun. We went over, but that's okay.
Do we give him the minute to expand on
it? I think it's only fair. Dan kind of gave himself a minute for each one and expanded just naturally. But I think, rules is rules, man. Like, is there anything there you want to give us more about? Any one of those answers you'd like the folks at home to know more about why you said it?
What did I say about the lower back tattoo? Because lower backs, now that I'm thinking about it, are not that.
Well, that's funny. I set that up thinking you would give me like a thing, like if I never had to do another.
There's
like
too many. There's too many. Yeah. I know that's. I kind of like knew that's what you meant, but
it
I
works
also
either
like,
way.
There's simply too many things I don't want to do, so I just kind of like put it to like the 36 body parts,
well, okay.
And I'm just like.
But now you got to say why lower back? Now you got to do it. Now you got to expand.
Oh, people just sit so shitty in the way. You got to like stretch. Yeah, I mean, I haven't really, I mean, other than like, I do a lot of back pieces, so I like by default end up tattooing lower backs. Mm-hmm. But I mean, you know, like I learned to tattoo in New Jersey in the early 2000s.
So you did a lot of lower back tattoos you're saying.
You know, that was very much like the tribal, it was like very much so a thing.
A lot of barbed wire. Yeah.
Exactly. So like I'm still not above doing that, but I guess like if I had to kind of like say like there's something that, man, I still like shudder to think, that would be it. Was just that, you know, the amount that I did.
Fair enough. So now everybody knows if they ever book you for a tattoo session, you'd prefer not to do their lower back.
I mean, we probably wouldn't even get that far if that's where they were going. So.
All right, Dan. Well, thank you so much for coming on and covering water.
That was
with
a really
us.
Good one, dude. I love
that. That was pretty funny. Before we go, do you want to tell us a little bit about Housefly and maybe like where to find you on the Instagram?
Sure. Yeah. So the shop itself is at 217 Main Avenue in Hawley, Pennsylvania. We're right next to Pat's Bar and my tattoo shop. It's called American House, just a couple doors down. We are on. You know, all the social media things, it's just Housefly Fishing, one word. Is it one word, Sean? Oh, it's two words. It's Housefly.
A co-owner.
It's Housefly _ fishing. Yeah. No, Tim right now in the future is listening to this, shaking, like hitting his jewel so hard, I'm telling you. So it's like on social media and like all that shit, but I'd rather you just come here and just see it yourself.
Dan's a blast, man. Like, I gotta hang out with that dude. He's already hinted that he's got interest in shad and snakeheads, and we don't live that far away from each other. I really appreciated his answer about the fly fishing Grateful Dead connection. Like, I thought it was thoughtful, but I also still hate the Grateful Dead and Godsmack, since, you know, we're saying them, since we're rolling them off.
Yeah. As much as I appreciate like all types of music, man, I'm not a huge Deadhead either.
Right.
So I'm not in the target marketing group for that $800 steal your face Able fly reel that, you know.
I always found them kind of funny because the Dead is all about being a free spirit and like child of the earth and peace, love, and simple living. But then to afford the Grateful Dead Able, you have to work on Wall Street. You know what I mean? Like, shouldn't a Grateful Dead reel cost as much as a Frisbee? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, interestingly enough, something you might not know about Dan is that he recently put out a bunch of signs that say, it's some like, be kind, do not litter.
Oh, okay.
And they have the Grateful Dead bear on them.
Right.
He sold a million of those things during the pandemic. I mean, just reprint after reprint, and people took them, and they're like parking signs almost.
Oh, I'm not surprised.
You can put them onto like the post that holds up like a stop sign, you know, like that like rectangular post with the holes
in it? Yeah,
it's fitted so you can put those everywhere and you'll see them all over the place.
Huh.
But anyway, forget the Grateful Dead, man. We're going to talk about something else, and that's you, Joe. You're going to be dead meat when I kick your butt in this week's installment of Fish News.
Fish News!
That escalated quickly.
Hey, so while the B-side train is still rolling, let's talk about the show airing today at 1 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Mountain. I'm going to challenge your idea of what makes a fish worthy of targeting in today's show. How about that? And so far, like, we've chased some oddballs, right? Those being American shad and snakeheads. But here's the thing. Those are fairly niche fish. Not everyone lives where those species live. But in today's show, we're going after red horse suckers. And even if you don't have red horse, strong chance you've got some species of sucker swimming close to home, because there's like a million of them in this country.
So that begs the question, man. Why would you fly all the way to Minnesota to get they're right around everybody's backyard. So I went to fucking Minnesota.
Because that's where my sucker guy was, man. Okay. Yes,
you're a sucker.
I did fly. Dude, I posed that question in the beginning. Am I the sucker or are you the sucker for not liking suckers? Okay. But yes, I did. I flew all the way out to Minnesota to hang out with my bud Tyler Winter. And Tyler, he was actually in season 2 of Das Boot chasing big mouth buffalo. That's how this connection was made. And I can honestly say I've never met a guy more ate up with underdog fish than Tyler. Like, he lives to chase all the fish that most other people don't want to. And while there's a big culture I'm very aware of around sucker gigging in the Ozarks, that's like a big deal, a nighttime gig deal. Tyler's the only guy I know that wants to convince you that suckers are just as worthy of targeting with a rod and reel as trout and bass. So that's why I went all the way to Minnesota to hang with him, Hayden. It's not about the fish, it's about the man. It's about the man.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right. Well, you know, there is like part of me that appreciates the accessibility of like that fishery in general. When I was a kid, you could actually catch like kind of a legit, like, this is an anecdotal observation, and I made this observation as a child, but you could catch kind of a legit like sucker spawning run behind my house in the springtime. And I don't know exactly which ones they are, because if I'm being totally honest, like, suckers are just kind of things I think might be trout until they're not.
Yes. I think every trout fisherman has, yes.
Right.
Especially when they hit a big-ass streamer or something occasionally.
Well, maybe you can help me identify them, because these ones got this, like, really heavy black bar running from head to tail during, like, their spawn. And we kind of used to goof around with them when we saw them.
I know exactly what you're talking about. I have caught them. We need Tyler here, because I have no idea what they are. I am not versed in the classification. But anyway, look, I'm not going to give away my conclusion here, but I'll say this, right? In a world where everyone complains about how crowded their favorite fishing holes are, Tyler is targeting a completely unpressured fish in some beautiful places, and there is nobody else around. So there's something to be said for that. Right? Like, keep that in mind when you watch. There's something to be said for that.
Mm-hmm.
There's also something to be said about this being a competition, which it is, right?
Hayden
and I do not know. It was
horrible
perfect.
Transition.
It was perfect. Terrible. So perfect. It was perfect. Perfect. I'm Mr. Perfect.
So
Hayden and I do not know which news story the other Jen is bringing to the table. And at the end, a winner will be declared by our smashing audio engineer, Phil. Will it be the voice of Phil today, which is the voice of an angel, or the CGI Phil that we got last week? We'll find out, but it is your lead, man. Take the floor. What you got?
All right. So this week we're going to go down. I've been like on the international news beat. So this week it's good. We're going down under in a story about a fisherman who almost ended up as cut bait. An unidentified 60-year-old man was fishing on his property in far north Queensland in the McIver River. That's McIver, not McIver. He goes down to his favorite hole, and what does he find? a big-ass bull standing right about where he wants to be. And I guess that's, like, sort of a global truth about pasture fishing in general. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. I never had to deal with that until I came out here. But livestock, particularly bulls, preventing you from getting places is, like, a real thing.
It is a real thing, and I don't even need the bull. I can just get myself scared of the cows. I've dealt with this in Amish country, PA, mm-hmm. like walking around some of those farms, because the Amish, you know, as sort of cloistered as they are, most of them don't mind if you like walk down the river on their property to carp fish or whatever. And there have been several instances where I'm like, I'm not walking through this field. Like, I do not trust these large animals. I do not like this. So that is very real. You are correct.
Yeah. So anyway, dude tries to shoo the bull away, and I guess the bull ends up moving because the next thing the report says is that he was trying to make a cast when, bam, croc attack.
Ooh.
And that Elton John moment was brought to you by our resident Elton John superfan, Spencer Newharth.
Wait a minute. I didn't know Spencer was an Elton John fan, but how is it brought to us by Spencer? Where does he fit into this?
He's off killing deer or something. Anytime I can rib Spencer for his like undying love of Elton John, he's like traveling hundreds of miles this spring to go see Elton John.
Fair. I like it. I'll keep that joke going. I'll hit the next one.
Okay. Sounds good. Anyhow, so the fight is on. The croc grabs him by both legs and starts dragging him into the water. The dude tries to hold on to the mangroves he's in and initially succeeds, but in what can only be described as a shocking turn of events, the croc overpowers him and he ends up in the river. It is not looking good for unidentified Dundee.
No.
So, Joe, does he resign himself to death? Does he struggle to break free and swim ashore? No. Ask me what he does next.
Whatever it is. It's going to be badass because Australians are just tougher than we are. Like, that is just, I firmly believe that. Go ahead. What does he do next?
He somehow orients himself, reaches to his waistband, and pulls out a knife.
That's not a knife. That's a knife.
How could I not? Sometimes the shit just
writes
itself.
You had to do it. Yeah. It's fine. You had to do it. It's okay.
Anyhow, yeah, the guy pulls out a knife and starts stabbing the shit out of the crocodile, and the croc lets him go. Mm-hmm. Then this badass proceeds to swim ashore, get in his car, and drive himself to the hospital where, at the time of the press release I lifted this from, he was still recovering. My favorite part of the story is actually in the press release, where they felt the need to include that a crocodile expert examined the man and verified that his injuries were indeed consistent with a crocodile attack.
Wonder how much that guy gets paid, you know what I mean?
Yup, this wasn't a cow. So you may be wondering about the fate of the crocodile. A lot of folks know that up here in the Northern Hemisphere, when somebody gets attacked by like a bear or something, most of the time the conservation officers will like go and try and remove the problem bear.
Sure.
Now, the report says, quote, due to the circumstances, including the remote location of the property and that there is no public access in the vicinity, DES, that's Department of Environment and Science, will not target the crocodile for removal from the wild. I think part of this is that they assumed the croc was initially drawn to the section of the river because of the bull. And when the guy shooed the bull away and assumed his position, the croc saw the guy and was like, well, I guess that'll do. It wasn't like targeting people, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I kind of get that. It's like, you know, you remove problem animals or whatever. If it's already way, way the hell out in the bush, where do you remove it and take it to? It's already pretty much out there in the wild.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, you know, just like bear country or whatever, crocs are kind of an omnipresent threat in this area. It's just part of the deal if you're fishing there. In fact, they're so prevalent that in the DES press release, they listed some croc avoidance measures for this particular area. The first of which basically says, assume they're everywhere and don't go in the water.
Assume you'll be attacked by a croc. Yeah. Step one. Yeah.
So, you know, this was sort of a quick hit, something I assumed our listeners would be interested in. And, you know, if you've listened to our campfire stories, you know, here at Meat Eater, we always like a good tale of survival against the odds.
Severed fingers work too. We like anything, any sort of parts removed from the person. We're all about it here.
If you got a great survival story, feel free to send that in. But anyhow, the sun never sets on a badass, and all of us here at Bent wish our crack fighting pal a speedy recovery.
You all right?
I'm always all right when I'm with you, Dundee.
Anyway, so you had a quick hit there, and I'm going to have a couple quick hits because, full disclosure, I'm calling it a fairly slow news week here, and I kind of had a feeling you'd grab that story, and it was kind of like the best piece of salami on the charcuterie board this week, and you had the lead. So here's what I'm going to do, right? I'm going to double down, and I'm going to hit two follow-ups very, very quickly. Both of these are listener-prompted, but I think we need to do them. So we'll start in Pennsylvania and drop by to see the old hillbilly surf and turf pitmaster himself, Richard the Breeze Nicholson.
Oh, shit.
You guys remember the Breeze, right? I know you remember the Breeze. We love the Breeze.
Wow, it was like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, it wasn't that long ago. Yeah.
If I don't remember, call the doctor.
Anyway, in case you missed it, late October, he yanked an 18.1-pound walleye out of the Yucatan River in PA using a live chub delivered on a noodle rod. And we covered this story right after it happened. And at the time, the fish was pending state record status. Well, it's been certified, and now the Breeze is officially the new king dog of PA walleye fishing. And I think that's awesome, because you and I talked about how satisfying it was to have that 41-year-old standing record overtaken by a bank fisherman like the Breeze. It's just so good.
It's so good. And you see like that kind of thing also in like whitetail hunting or whatever, when like a kid, you know, sitting on a bucket on opening day shoots like a mega giant.
A thousand point buck.
Oh, it's just like such like a nice underdog. Yeah, I love that shit.
Take that, side scan sonar. Anyway, so good for him. I'm happy for him. I really mean that because it was a fun story. But furthermore, you may recall that the Breeze was pretty much sharpening the fillet knife. He was honing it to just a fine edge. And was about to start cutting when his son suggested, hey, like maybe we shouldn't cut that up right away because it could be a record. So now it's certified, and the Breeze, he wants to eat this fish badly. And I'm under the impression, per the news story, that it's been frozen whole since it was caught in October. Because here's what the story says, the news story. Nicholson is planning to have the fish mounted and hoping the taxidermist can save the meat. Quote, I want to have a walleye party, he said about enjoying eating what he catches. It would be a shame to waste all that meat. First of all, I want to go to that party, like the Breeze family record walleye wrap-up party, because that's going to be a scream. And second, while I appreciate all that, like, I don't know, man, I feel like I know just enough about how skin mount fish taxidermy works to say that getting the skin mount and the meat is a long shot. Like that's I'm not really sure. What I would say is, Breeze, eat the fish. You want to so badly. Stuff that thing and roast it on a spit. Get a replica mount, right?
Yep.
It's not skin, but get a replica mount. Or may
you can't
I suggest
tell the difference?
Yeah.
They look better long term too.
Dude, I have a walleye here that's a skin mount, long story, but it's like melting off the wall. Like it just like drips oil onto the floor. Anyway. Or may I suggest that the Breeze get a Gyutaku print, even though so many people make them, I'm not even sure that's cool anymore.
I don't know what that is.
The Japanese fish print on the rice paper.
Oh, okay. I do know what that is. Yep.
Like a million years ago, it was like special. It was like, you know, the one dude who could do the bonsai tree, and now like you can pick up a bonsai tree at the CVS. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I hear you.
Yeah. So anyway, moving on, and I'll tell you right now, I'm hitting this very fast because it's beating a dead horse. Like literally, horse meat might actually be involved. But I'm doing this because I deliver what the Bent listeners want, okay? So, second little story here. Just when Subway thought it cleared up that whole thing about their tuna not being tuna, a new round of testing says not only is it not tuna, there may actually be no seafood in it whatsoever. And this is one of the same women that started this whole class action lawsuit and lost has restoked the fires, claiming a new study says the, quote, tuna, contains animal proteins such as chicken, pork, and cattle, and not the advertised 100% tuna. To which I say, I still 100% do not care. Okay. You throw some Southwest sauce on some pork and cattle protein, and that's delicious. So, you know, a million people sent this to me, and here's what I say. Basically, all this proves is that Subway tuna is kind of like a loose hot dog, like a pre-hardened hot dog.
That
you know what I'm saying?
Horrifying. Please.
Your face right now is great, because I know we know how much you love canned. Dude, when you said last time that you don't like canned tuna, a million people sent me all these pictures like, well, he doesn't know about this organic one and this one. And you were like, I'm not eating any of that.
I don't care if like, I don't care if the Queen of England caught this tuna and it was filleted by her like private fishmongers. I'm not eating that shit. It has nothing to do with the quality of it. I just don't like it.
So, look, we all know you hunt and you eat a lot of wild game.
Yeah.
But do you ever just, like, buy yourself a pack of Nathan's hot dogs? Like, will you just eat, like, a hot dog? Like a dirty water cart dog from Philly?
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, if I'm somewhere where the opportunity to eat a hot dog, like, presents itself, you know, I'm not going to be like, no, sir, I don't eat hot dogs, you know? And in the same way, yeah, I don't know, man. Leave me the fuck alone.
It's a simple question. Do you eat hot dogs?
Occasionally. It's not something I seek out.
Okay, that's fine. My point is that, like, it's just like if you're skeeved out about this tuna because it might have these chicken, cattle, and pork whatever proteins in them, but
that
you eat hot dogs, like, it's hypocritical.
Feel better about the tuna.
Oh, there you go. I was kind of thinking the same thing. It's like we didn't know what it was, and now at least we know. And it's the same thing in your average hot dog.
If somebody
so let's
was
all
like,
calm down.
If somebody was like, do you want to eat this tuna that's not tuna? I would be more inclined to eat that than somebody going, do you want to eat this tuna that is tuna?
Fair enough. Finally, last thought on this, okay? And this is true words right here. I vow to never bring this up again. This is the last time we're doing Subway tuna, and here's why. Little open letter to Subway. I have devoted so much airtime to standing next to you through this entire ordeal. Like, I have defended your hot dog tuna for months. Have you said thanks? Like, reached out? How about a code I can pass along to the Bent listeners for one free tuna sandwich and a bag of fucking Sun Chips? No. Nothing. So that's it. I will continue to consume your products, but I will not defend you on this podcast here anymore. Issue closed. Best of luck with the legal proceedings. Hayden, you had anything to say about that before we kick it over to Phil?
No, man, that's pretty good. If we do get that Subway plug, I'm just letting you know it's all going to Black Forest Ham for me.
Hayden will just have the Italian BMT. Anyway, Phil, a lot of stuff on the menu here. We kind of threw you off with a bunch of quick hits. We'll see what Phil liked this week, and then we are going to do a sale bin where we get to meet up with a dear old friend.
Joe, thank you for the updates. I appreciate them. Really, I do. I mean, spread some of that breeze on a Subway tuna. I'll be a happy man. But unfortunately, you came in with two stories, technically, and frankly, that seems a bit unfair. It's not in the spirit of Fish News. Sort of like bringing a gun to a... So, Hayden, you're the winner! And shouts to the guy in Australia getting stabby with the crocodile. I hope you feel better soon. Frankly, you're the most badass thing to come out of Australia since Bluey. And you parents out there with a Disney Plus subscription know what I'm talking about. Around with Bluey and find out.
Well, why did you put the ad in the paper if you don't know what I'm getting at?
Well, you didn't have to be so hurtful with me, so angry.
I'm excited for this sale bin because it's not really about a new item for sale. Rather, we're just checking in with an old friend, if you will. It's like a where are they now? And here's how this all came about. So I was trout fishing up in North Jersey not long ago. And just a few days prior, we had like a major rain event out here and all the rivers shot up, like serious flooding. We're talking about, you know, a really small, narrow river kicked up well above 2000 CFS for like a day and a half. Right. Yeah. So I show up right after the drop and I'm walking along and come upon a canoe that is pretty destroyed. Right. Like it's just crumpled. And you could tell when this thing came down from wherever it started in this flood, like it T-boned many trees in the process. So I immediately thought of Jerry, the Craigslist canoe salesman.
There you go.
The same Jerry that's ultimately responsible for our Billy Wants a Shotgun stickers.
You know, guy. Hayden wants a Billy Wants the Shotgun sticker. I still haven't gotten one of those yet. No.
Mm. Damn, that's horrible of me. Okay. I'll remedy that.
Make a
note.
Promise. So I remember like listening to these, and I remember it being suggested that you go visit Jerry and look at his canoes and have a cup of tea with him because he lives really close to you, right?
He does. He lives right down the road. And as you pointed out, yeah, Jerry ends every post about the current canoe for sale, inviting you to come over, buy a canoe, and have a cup of tea with
him. Nice guy.
And we concluded that Jerry really, you know, he wants a friend more than anything. And he never posts a photo. You only get a text description. And they are just wonderfully written. And the original Jerry sale bins ran in, I think, episode 35 and 40. So we're going back a ways. And I kind of thought maybe a bunch of the Bent listeners forgot about old Jerry until I posted that shot of that beat up canoe and said Jerry would have this fixed up and on Craigslist in no time. Well, I was wrong, right? You guys did not forget about Jerry. Here are a few of my favorite comments. You have all winter to turn that into next year's DOS boat with Jerry, and you're going to need a lot of tea. Okay, that was good. That was a fun one. Here's another one I like a lot. I think Jerry would pull that baby straight with a telephone pole and a truck, then have a damn good story about stopping traffic while doing it, probably. Somebody else said, I think Billy would take a shotgun over that canoe any day. Mm. And another one said, see what happens when Billy doesn't get a shotgun. So... All different approaches, you know.
Didn't the one about Billy wanting a shotgun also kind of get like a little bit dark and suggest that if he gets the shotgun, something real terrible is going to happen?
Yeah, like he's going to kill people. I'm pretty sure it did say that. But this is fine literature,
okay,
Hayden, that Jerry is writing. Jerry is a master of Craigslist prose. Anyway, the response to my canoe photo got me wondering, is Jerry still selling? What's Jerry up to? Is there maybe a fresh Jerry post? And wouldn't you know it, there was. Jerry was active just in October, and up for grabs this round is an Old Town Tripper Royal X for $400. And I read, hey, I've been away for a while. I was on assignment, and a bunch of Sports Illustrated swimsuit models captured me and used me as a love slave over an extended period of time.
All right, Jerry.
Jerry, I used this canoe to make my escape. After a float by the volcanoes of the Canary Islands, I washed up in Strathmere, New Jersey. This canoe is the Royal X version with the original factory skids. It is 17 feet long. It's in pretty good shape. The seats could use a canning. This is a very rare piece and highly sought after. So Jerry is dating himself yet again because, I mean, is the Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue even a thing anymore? Like, is SI in print, or did that die with pretty much all the rest of the print mags? You know,
dude, I have no idea. Maybe
fair. I don't know either. I don't do sports. But I'll date myself as well by saying that when I think of the SI swimsuit issue, I still think of Kathy Ireland. And when I was in the fifth grade, getting an SI swimsuit issue was the closest you came at that point to just like getting porn. It was a big deal, you know.
I guess if we're like talking about like generational SI swimsuit, you know, cover models, I tend to think of like Kate Upton.
See, like, that was like high school. Is. And I assume you don't know who Kathy Ireland is.
I don't.
Nowadays, I think she has a beautiful line of throw rugs at Home Goods or something like that.
Yeah. The, you know, I kind of loved the rest of this post. I read the post when you sent it over, man.
Yeah.
And
you want to finish it? You want to bring it home with Jer? Yes.
Could
by
I?
All means, all right. Bring it home. Tell him what else Jer had to say.
Okay. He continues. If you have an interest in this canoe, go do your research, look it up on the web. This canoe is a collector's item, but I could care less. I would be happy to see someone just using it. The weather has warmed and it's tea time again, so stop on by, have a look. I still have several other canoes about. Come sit, talk, imagine yourself and the person you love drifting down Sylvan waters.
Sylvan.
And drifting across a vermilion sea. Call me or text me or send a semaphore code. Peace be upon you. What?
Jerry always manages to throw at least one term in there that I have to look up. In one of these, he used douse light, and I was calling people douse lights for a while after that. Nobody knew it. But this time, I had to look up semaphore, since he asked for a semaphore code, and a semaphore is any apparatus used for visual signaling, whether it be with fire, lights, flags, sunlight, or moving arms. So semaphore, that's like kind of like your word of the week right there.
All right, there you go. Well, hey, look, man, the next time I come back out east, which should be soon for the holidays,
yeah,
let's go visit Jerry together, man. What do you think?
We should. You know, I would actually be more open to that just in case Jerry actually has a shotgun. At least I'd have backup. But I'm betting Jerry's actually a very good guy. And he would probably really appreciate a Billy Wants a Shotgun sticker. He has no idea any of this is happening, right? This is three times now he's been featured on the fishing podcast, Bent. Yeah, we'll give him a sticker. Maybe we'll even record with Jerry. We'll bring a couple mics and have a cup of tea. You know what I mean?
Yeah, man. I'm all about it. We can do it. And I gotta say, man, I'm so happy to have been a part of an official Jerry Sailbin post.
Yeah. It's an honor, isn't it?
I feel as if I'm in hallowed ground in the circle of, you know, Bent illustrious folks. Anyhow, this is a friendly reminder that we rely on you guys to let us know what kind of weird, wacky fishing shit you're finding on your favorite online classified forums. And when you find a post that's particularly good, send the link to Bent at themeateater.com. Because Billy wants to make more fun of people's attempts to make a profit.
Ah, man, it was good to hear from Jerry again. That was probably the least controversial Jerry post yet. He didn't encourage giving kids guns or smoking while canoeing down some whitewater in this one. So, you know.
No, I guess that's like one Jerry that we've talked about on this podcast isn't encouraging smoking of anything.
good
but
call.
Thank you. If you want some controversy, I can provide it.
Oh, how's that?
With an end of the line segment about something that is both like revered and hated, and I'm going to say completely misunderstood, and also catches more trout than pretty much any fly you and I, or anybody else for that matter, could tie.
I have guesses. I could guess, but I won't.
Well, good. This also sort of fits our tattoo theme because you have to poke it with a sharp object.
Fishy, 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 fishy!
Well, that's not loud enough, Bert.
If you're like 99% of other fishermen, particularly fly fishermen, Alaska is somewhere on your bucket list. If you ask an angler what they think of when they envision Alaska, you'll find a lot of the same images and species repeating. Salmon run so dense you could walk across the river on the backs of silvers and kings. You know, Dolly Varden, longer than your arm and painted up like clowns in their full spawning regalia. Steelhead of mythical proportions and their resident rainbow counterparts backflipping and cartwheeling out of the river. And sore shoulders from spending all day swinging flies, catching fish after fish, and experiencing arguably the greatest cold water fishing the world has to offer. There's a little bit of an open secret in these rivers, almost as omnipresent as the fish we target, and it's as effective as it is divisive. My friends, that secret is the trout bead. Now, before you wade into the controversy surrounding the fishing of beads, let's talk about the beads themselves. For the uninitiated, a trout bead is a small spherical bead pegged with a toothpick about 2 inches above a bare hook. Beads can be fished on any rig, spin, centerpin, or fly. At first glance, a bead is pretty cut and dry. I mean, it's literally just a round bead, similar to the thousands of beads you'd find at the Hobby Lobby. In fact, I'm sure some anglers buy beads at the Hobby Lobby because there is an entire subculture dedicated to bead fishing that is as fanatical about colors, weights, sizes, and hues as dry fly fishermen are trying to pick out that perfect shade of dun for their Quill Gordons. All beads are not created equal, however, and anglers are fiercely devoted to their preferences. Glass versus plastic, peach versus orange, 6mm or 8mm. Bead-specific companies have made fortunes selling beads crafted with jealously guarded secret formulas for just the right color, sheen, and molting. You'll find grown men hoarding nail polish like teenage girls, scouring pharmacies and makeup counters in their free time, looking for that perfect shade of red, pink, orange, or even blue for the all-important blood dot. Now, on to the controversy. We're not going to dive into whether or not it's fly fishing. That's between you, the fish, and a higher power. The real controversy is how the fish is hooked. To understand this, we first need to understand how a bead rig works. As I'd mentioned, a bead rig is a bare hook with a bead pegged about 2 inches up the leader. When the fish bites the bead, the angler sets the hook, and that hook, which is dangling outside the fish's mouth, is pulled into the outside corner of their jaw. Here's why that's controversial. Many people see the placement of that hook set outside the mouth and immediately equate that as evidence that this is no more than a legal means to floss or snag fish. Go ahead and search, "Is bead fishing ethical?" on Google, and you'll find forums filled with heated 8-page arguments between anglers debating the issue. I would argue that bead fishing is not flossing or snagging for one simple reason. The fish has to voluntarily bite the bead in order to hook themselves. From my perspective, that alone settles the debate. Sporting ethics aside, you'll often hear folks argue that beads are somehow damaging to the fish. Beads are deadly effective, but if there's one thing they're not, it's deadly. If you're into fish and catch and release, beads could very well be the most ethical tool at your disposal. Because the bead is pegged a few inches above the hook, the fish can inhale it without the danger of being hooked deeply. The hook set pulls the hook into the outside corner of its mouth, not into its gullet. Not only does this save the fish from having its gills ripped apart by a deeply taken yet apparently more ethical glow bug, it also saves the fish from the difficult hook removals that often come with a deep take. In fisheries where significant cold is a factor, like Great Lakes steelhead fisheries for instance, this can save a fish from flash frozen gills. It's simply easier to remove a hook from the outside corner of a steelhead's mouth without taking it out of the water. Now, you might be thinking to yourself that I'm some sort of bead fishing evangelist. You may be surprised to know that I've only ever fished beads a handful of times. Unfortunately, I'm cursed with a bug for tying bugs and plagued by the compulsion to use them. That said, I fished with many, many centerpin, spin, and fly anglers who all use beads. I've netted well over 100 bead-caught steelhead, and in all that time, there are two things that I've seen very, very rarely. A deeply hooked fish, or a fish hooked more than an inch or two from its mouth. Sorry, fly guys, I'll be the first to admit that I've pulled a lot of pheasant tails and sucker spawn from peck fins. Ah yes, the bead debate. Whether or not we'll all agree one day remains to be seen, but as long as there are people catching fish, there are going to be folks complaining about how they're going about it. Are you a bead guy, feverishly painting until the wee hours of the morning while you gear up for your next steelhead trip? Are you a fly fishing purist who thinks the beads are the undoing of everything a sportsman stands for? Whatever your position, be sure to drop us a note at ben@themeateater.com, letting us know where you stand on the bead debate, and if, perhaps for the first time, a bead ends up at the end of your line.
So that's it for this week. A few things to keep in mind if you're studying the flash wall and deciding what to get inked. Two trout beads with a toothpick between them might not translate properly. A full-body Kathy Ireland tattoo is fine, but you're not allowed to do that unless you've seen Necessary Roughness. Dan Santoro isn't sure how to spell the name of the fly shop he co-owns. And Hayden Samick wants you to tell him what fish he should get emblazoned on his upper rib cage.
Yeah, I'm extremely open to ideas, or maybe sort of open to ideas. And you can go right ahead and send those to ben@themeateater.com along with your awkward photos, sale bin items, bar nominations, voice memos, and favorite nail polish colors for your favorite trout beads.